Since March 2009, the Pharmacy Podcast has been developing content monthly, weekly, and daily for the business of pharmacy. With more than 25 different podcast channels, more than 1 million downloads, and 30-plus participating pharmacists, the Pharmacy Podcast Network is the global leader in podcasting for the pharmacy professional. Find all of our podcast channels by going to pharmacypodcast.com/shows.
In today's rapidly changing healthcare environment, healthcare providers, including pharmacists, are experiencing emotional exhaustion, moral injury, and burnout at an increased prevalence. By their training, healthcare providers have a high degree of resilience. This podcast is not about basic resilience. Rather, the Resilience Rx podcast is here to help pharmacists grow amidst stress. Each episode, hosted by Kate Gaynor, CEO of the Iowa Pharmacy Association, features a fail-forward interview with a pharmacy leader and a personal growth and well-being tip. Your prescription for resilience, provided by Tammy Rogers, founder of the Maven Group. Resilience Rx is part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Thanks for listening.
I'm excited for this episode of Resilience Rx and our fail-forward interview with Mike Brownlee. Mike is the Chief Pharmacy Officer and an Associate Hospital Director at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. He holds many additional titles at the University of Iowa as well, including a Clinical Associate Professor, an Associate Dean for Clinical Education, Residency Director, and on the Board of Directors for UI Community Home Care and the Iowa Poison Control Center. He received his master's degree in health system pharmacy administration from the University of Kansas and has worked in multiple health system administration roles in the states of Kansas, Oregon, and recently back in Iowa. What's not in Mike's formal bio is that he also has an amazing family, two young boys that keep he and his wife busy, and his wife has a very successful career as an attorney also. So many of the points that come through in his fail-forward interview have to do with resilience, both in professional settings and on the personal front as well. This might just be my favorite interview yet. Give it a listen.
Well, welcome to today's podcast. I'm so excited for today's guest, Mike Brownlee. Mike, welcome to the Resilience Rx podcast.
Hi, Kate. Thanks for having me. It's great to be on the podcast today.
Absolutely. And I'm really excited for this fail-forward interview. As our listeners have heard from your bio, Mike, you've achieved great success in your pharmacy career, not only as a chief pharmacy officer and healthcare executive, but in leadership and in so many areas. Our fail-forward interviews are designed to share how failure is not the opposite of success, but rather an important part of successful careers. And I know just from you being in the state of Iowa and my work with the Iowa Pharmacy Association and all of the leadership training that you've provided for pharmacists in the state, we've had a lot of conversations about this, Mike, and about failure, even though it might sound like a strong word, that it's not a bad thing.
I agree 100%, and I appreciate the efforts on talking about failure and resiliency, and it's all tied together, because without failure you don't learn and you can't actually get better at what you do. So I'm excited to be able to talk about that today on the podcast.
Thanks. Well, we like to start the fail forward interviews with a highlight of your career, or you know, something that is a high point, so to speak. So can you tell the listeners, Mike, what has been a great achievement, or maybe one of the most meaningful things for you thus far in your pharmacy career?
Yeah, Kate, I actually thought about this a little bit before we started the podcast, that, you know, the one of the things I'm most excited about in my career, that I had a chance to be a part of something special and also tied into one of my biggest failures as well. So I think it'll tie together pretty well today as we talk about failure and resiliency. The example I'll use was before my time here at Iowa. I had a chance to be a part of the implementation of a new technology that had not been used before for pharmacy practice. So I'll set up the scenario just quickly with what the setting was. But the organization I worked for was in the process of acquiring an oncology group that took care of patients. So there were five different sites. One of those was a main site. And through the acquisition, we were to take over their operations with chemotherapy preparation, clinical services, patient management. And interestingly enough, the oncology practice had never had a pharmacist working for them before. So we went through the process of the acquisition. It was a very tight time frame. And not all of the sites had the same workload volume. And we were struggling to try and identify how we were going to provide services for patients with these infusions with the limited staff we had and being able to have it all connected through the same system. So what we did was we took a technology that was not intended to be used in this way, but we deployed the technology to all of the remote sites and basically created telepharmacy for the preparation of chemotherapy. So in that, we utilized technicians at remote sites to prepare the chemo, and then the oversight of the preparation was by a pharmacist at a remote location. So this was in the 2007, was about when we started the process, and completed it in late 2008. So it, you know, this was, you know, a little over 10 years ago when this was cutting edge implementation of technology for this type of preparation. I think the most valuable part of this, from my personal perspective and professional perspective, is we took pharmacy services into an area where they had never been before and were desperately needed. The preparation of chemo was not being done appropriately. The staff that were doing it were not garbed and protected from the chemo. There were so many things where we came in and added value almost immediately. So from my perspective, the implementation of this technology to help with the remote preparation of chemotherapy was definitely one of the highlights of my career.
Yeah, and your team received some recognition, right, for that implementation and deployment of telepharmacy to improve patient safety. Is that right?
Yeah, we received an innovation award from the American Community Cancer Center Association, and we're able to go to their annual meeting and receive that as a team. But that was with the whole team together. That was with nursing, the physicians, and everyone. And it was great to be able to see that kind of collaboration that led to that award. But the pathway to that was the one that was bumpy. And I would say there were some failures in there that I definitely learned a lot from. But it was tremendous to be able to receive that award for implementation of an innovative practice.
Yeah, and I'm sure in the presentation of that award, while I wasn't there at the meeting, when they probably talked about the successes and the innovation, it was probably the highlight reel, so to speak. And that's really the point of this podcast, is to go beneath the surface. And like you said, it was a bumpy road to get there. And I know you shared some of that with me before. Can you share with the listeners maybe what some of those bumps were along the way for you personally or for the team that was working to implement telepharmacy for the chemotherapy prep in those cancer clinics?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing for us in any acquisition is trying to merge the cultures together. So this was an independent practice that was overseen by a physician who had hired the nursing director to run the nursing practice side of it. So, you know, we're trying to develop relationships where we were seen as maybe not in the most favorable light coming in, because we were going to change this culture that they had as an organization. So almost immediately the relationship was antagonistic, and it was, who are you to tell us what to do because we've been doing it right for so long, that we struggled with the relationship side of this right away because of the pace of trying to get the operations up and running. And, you know, we didn't understand how they operated, and it took some time to try and dig into that. So that was one issue, was forging relationships with the clinical staff and the owners of the company through the acquisition. So to the point that it was so antagonistic that they were making negative references to the patients about our services from a pharmacy perspective, and were actively working against us every single day. So you can imagine how hard that is and how hard it is to be resilient when you go in every single day and the team you're working with is actively working against you.
Before you talk about the next bump, Mike, can we just break that one down a little bit? So in those relationships or, you know, kind of getting over that initial antagonism, how did you or your team fail forward? What, you know, how did that eventually either overturn or get smoothed over or improved?
So one of the things we did was we tried to make sure we understood their operations and workflow in a non-defensive kind of way. So and we worked to set that up in an environment that was safe to them. So we met at neutral locations. We made sure we understood what winning looked like to them. So when you look at any negotiation and you want it to be that win-win scenario, first thing you have to do is understand what winning even looks like and what were the challenges that they were facing. And obviously, when you're looking at an acquisition, sometimes it was because the business you're acquiring was not functioning at the right level that they should have been. So they actually had some operational issues that we believed we could help with. So first thing we did was we tried to understand how to help them win. And then we spent a lot of time demonstrating and inviting them into our operations at the main hospital to show them what we do and how we ensure safety and ensure the quality of care for the patients and to improve patient satisfaction. Because when we came in and we were introducing steps into the process that slowed things down, but for a good reason, to make it safer. So to earn their trust, which is what we were trying to do, was we wanted to help them. We wanted to understand how they could perceive winning. And we wanted them to know that we were doing this at the highest quality of care and that we were doing everything we could to help improve the operation. So, you know, having an attitude and approach that is collaborative and helping them succeed as well, instead of us being antagonistic back. You know, it would have been very easy for us to hold a hard line and say, you're just going to do what we tell you to do. That would not have worked to our benefit. So as this relationship continued to emerge and we helped them win and we opened their eyes to what safety looked like from a chemotherapy preparation standpoint, they really came around and saw from our perspective how important it was that you follow a process. And it took about a year for us to fully integrate and earn their trust. And then they stood side by side with us and were advocates of ours once we had a chance to go through this process together. And like I said, with winning that award, we all stood up there together and were able to do it together as a team. So, you know, the process was long and arduous, but I think we had the right approach. Initially, it felt like a huge failure, but we had good core principles of trying to do the right things for them and for the patients that we had a privilege to take care of.
Yeah, there's so many nuggets of good information in there. I think, you know, kind of putting your defenses down, you talked about a non-defensive approach and earning their trust, kind of just that style of leadership, but also the timeline, you know, and knowing that not only in relationships, but in any big venture, you know, things might not move as quickly as you would hope or your team would hope. Have you had any times where you've just worked at relationships and taken the approach of, you know, all of the things that you talked about and it just didn't come around? And in those scenarios, you know, how did you move forward or move around the groups or personalities that you weren't able to resolve differences and come together to collaborate? Or has it been your experience that with enough persistence, you're able to align yourselves with other players that you're working with to end on a collaborative front and work together?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. And I think it's one of the biggest ones from a resilience perspective, that you're not always going to work with people that you like or that you fully agree with. And for me, it's probably half and half on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. But what is the common goal? And as long as you can find a common goal, and identify how to communicate effectively and both work toward that goal. You don't have to like every single person that you work with. And I think that's a struggle. And I deal with that with my teammates that, you know, I find times where I'm in the middle of conflict resolution because, you know, I've got teammates that don't want to work together and they can't find that common ground, but they're not really trying that hard because they're not understanding how they themselves are contributing to the negativity of that conversation. It's still about them. And that's why I talk about understanding the win for the other person. Because once you get into that frame of mind where you're trying to help the other person win, it's a completely different standpoint than you always trying to win or get what you think is right. And in the environment where we work, the right thing to do is the right thing for the patient and the family. And when you recenter the conversation around that, at least in my experience, I've found that that starts to resolve a lot of the issues. And from a personal perspective, one of the things I do is I spend a lot of time with self-reflection or using tools to do that so I can understand how I communicate more effectively. One of the tools that I use is the DISC profile. I know there are many that are out there, but I use that for myself and with my team so that, you know, we tend to look at conflict and it's a finger pointing where you say, well, that person doesn't know how to communicate, so I can't get what I want. Well, that's usually you're part of that too. And so I make sure that anytime I'm resolving conflict, especially anyone that I'm in, I look at myself first to see how I'm communicating. And then I look at the overall relationship. I think if we all spent more time trying to understand how we communicate more effectively, it would help resolve conflict a lot more easily as well.
Well, thanks for breaking that down, Mike, and just talking about one of the bumps along the way with overcoming what started out as an antagonistic relationship in implementing telepharmacy at your previous health system. But I know you had some other bumps along the way that you wanted to talk to. Can you maybe share if it was specific to that telepharmacy journey or just other personal failures or setbacks that you've had in your career?
So I think one more related to the telepharmacy implementation. The pace in which we were moving forward with the project was very aggressive. The technology was new and cutting edge, and we had to go to the Board of Pharmacy for approval. And, you know, the relationship we had with the board was not great at that time. So this, I think, only antagonized the board more to not be favorable toward our request. So we started off on the wrong foot with trying to get telepharmacy approved. And then we had an issue with one of our technicians at one of the remote sites. The result of that issue that came up at the remote site was the board ended up taking action against my license. So I received a civil penalty. And then we also received a penalty as the pharmacy. So there was a fine levied against the organization. And it led to several months of me having to sit personally in front of the board, defending not only the operation that we had created, but also my license. So I can tell you that was not a very fun position to be in.
Worst nightmare.
Yeah. So, you know, you get the brown envelope in your mail on a Saturday and you see that you're getting fined and someone's attacking your license, or the board was at that time. So it's not a great position to be in. You feel like a failure and that you're doing the wrong thing. So one day you feel like you're doing the right thing, the next day you don't.
What got you through those feelings? Was it a support system? Was it just understanding your values and keeping laser focus? Or what, you know, personal strategies did you use at that time? Because certainly it took some resilience to persevere when your own personal license and perhaps question of your professionalism was on the line.
So I think the first thing for me was I knew we were doing the right thing and we had the data to show that. So I believed in what we were doing. And I think when you find purpose in what you're doing, that helps your resiliency tremendously. So I knew the purpose was there. My leadership team or my team that was around me was tremendous as well. You know, they felt this as a personal attack on them because we were all in this together. And it was interesting because our relationship had started to resolve with the nursing and physician leadership within the organization. So then they came to help support me as well. So I think the leadership team helped. And then just from a personal perspective, I think we all find resiliency in our own personal networks, in our personal lives. So, you know, my family, my wife, my close friends, you know, when you have something that personal happen to you and you start to wonder if you're still going to have a career or, you know, what's actually going to happen, you tend to go to those that are closest to you. And I think that helped me tremendously through those more personal pieces of it. But I, you know, having a good team and a strong purpose, that helped tremendously to be resilient through that.
Yeah, you mentioned your family, Mike, and I know we've had a lot of conversations. You have two young sons and a wife who also has a very professional career. How has your family been a support system to you, or on a lot of these fail forward interviews, the pharmacists that have been part of the show, we kind of talk about this. Some people call it balance. Some people call it integration, you know, just trying to fit the pieces together to ensure that you can have this professional career and all the leadership milestones that you've achieved while still being, as I know you are, very engaged in your personal life as well.
Yeah, I like the term integration because you have to try and fit work and life together. And, you know, I work late at night because I want to be able to be home for dinner. And I try to have as much as I can, a schedule that allows for at least some time in the morning and then having supper together and some family time and then being present at my kids' activities. You know, those are things that fill my tank and help me to stay connected because, you know, from my perspective, my own family was and has been, you know, the rock from a resiliency perspective. Because as I mentioned before, having someone in that's close to you that you can share information with and bounce ideas off of and just give you a test with where you are in life, I think is really good. Our schedule is so busy. My wife has a high leadership position as well. And we can't do it without each other. We're a good team. We give each other some grace, you know, to be able to do the things we need to help from a work standpoint. And also it's good for the kids to see us working because we want them to learn how hard work can be important and valuable. And we want to set that in them as well. But, you know, like you said, with having a good support system at home has definitely allowed me to do not only everything in my career, because without them, I don't think I would have been able to do it. And in addition, they've helped keep me balanced and give me perspective. You know, I think that's really what it comes down to is I have better perspective when I can connect with my family.
Well, and I think integration is so important. And I think, Mike, I'll share with the listeners, too, because you're here in Iowa. I have the opportunity to work with you very closely, and Mike has done so much for the Iowa Pharmacy Association that he's here right in our state. Since he's returned to Iowa, I think for the past 5 years, he's facilitated a one-day leadership conference that we host for 10 new pharmacists in their first 15 years from the state of Iowa, and we co-host that with Wisconsin, and Mike and his counterpart Steve Rao at UW Health facilitate a one-day change or implementing change effectively workshop, I think is what we call it. And yep. I think it was at least 1 year, maybe twice, Mike, you've brought your family with you to that retreat. And while you were able to facilitate the conference, be present and engaged with the participants who really learned so much from you and sharing your expertise in a very laid back, casual environment, but so conducive to learning. You're also able to, you know, while you were a couple hours away from home, still integrate some family time too. So you're living it right now, right? So you truly are finding those ways to integrate professional and personal and blend it together.
You know, sometimes you just have to try, you know, and you just, you know, sometimes you have to go to meetings and you're busy. And I don't know that everyone tries to say, hey, maybe my family actually wants to come and be a part of what I do. And you go to locations that might be favorable for a family to go. And I think that is that integration piece, is trying to fit it together.
And it's not perfect, right? It might be clunky or messy, and it might not always work, but you have to find the times when it will work and be willing to try.
That's a good point. None of us are perfect. A lot of us and our work that we do is clunky, and it's just the way it is, you know, and you got to be okay with that. And that's part of life. And I think sometimes we try too hard to make everything perfect, but don't let perfect be the enemy of good, right?
Yeah, that's another good thing. Maybe one last question, Mike, or specific to the Fail Forward interview. We talked a lot about your really proud achievement with implementing telepharmacy and some of the bumps along the road and failures along the way to get there. Were there any other setbacks or failures that might be unique to your career, or perhaps something other pharmacists have also experienced or could experience at some point in their career that you might be able to relate?
You know, that's a great question. I think we all deal with failures in different ways every day. I think one thing that was unique to me, maybe unique to other people too, I don't know, but the first time I applied to get into pharmacy school, I didn't get in. I applied to 3 schools. I remember sitting on the step in my hometown and on the porch talking to my mom, thinking, what am I going to do? Because I didn't get into any of the colleges that I had applied to. And then I decided I was going to pursue a career in chemistry and thought I was going to go and get my PhD. And so, you know, you go through these setbacks, things like that. I don't think many people know that about me, that I didn't even get in the first time. And I've been able to bounce back from that. And it actually was interesting because it depends on how you choose to take setbacks and failures like that. So I took it as a motivator for me and made me dig in even harder. I guess that's part of my personality too. I'm fairly competitive, but I used it as something to push me forward instead of let me fall backwards. So, you know, I went to school for another year, got into pharmacy school, and have been able to continue to progress into the position I'm in. I'm very blessed and thankful for that. So I look back on that one experience that was pretty galvanizing in my career, that it gave me the motivation to keep pushing forward. I think for most people, you know, anyone on this podcast, you have situations. I've been in management positions where I've had my entire teams of staff leave and I had to jump in and run the operation. You know, you have situations where relationships fail. It's your perspective and how you look at it, how you take that moment, that failure. Maybe it's a medication error. You know, we've all faced that too. You can either try to get better or you can, fall backwards and not actually improve from that failure. So I think the college, you know, entrance into pharmacy was unique to me specifically, but I think I've shared a lot of failures that many people on this podcast have likely had that are just normal to practice. I just encourage everyone to look at your approach and how you deal with it, and know that you can use that experience to drive forward and continue to get better.
Yeah, and part of the goal of this podcast too is we're talking about these things. Pharmacists don't have to always be the perfectionist, even though the profession of pharmacy to a degree requires, that accuracy and high level of professionalism. But, you know, like you said, don't let perfect be the enemy of good, and don't be afraid to talk about these things so that we can all support one another.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, Mike, anything before we get to our speed round that we didn't cover in the Fail Forward interview? Actually, I wasn't sure if I was going to say this or not, but I'll share with the listeners. I had a Fail Forward moment when I first reached out to Mike to record this podcast. As you might imagine, his calendar is very busy and worked with his admin. And I was like, oh, I just need 45 minutes of Mike's time, and got it. Recorded the podcast. It was amazing. And then I hung up the phone and went to stop recording it on my computer, and I never started the podcast. I forgot to hit record, and it was the best podcast I had ever recorded. And I thought, oh, darn it. And when I reached back out to Mike and said, oh, I am so sorry, we're going to have to do that over, even though it was perfect. We're going to have to do it over. And Mike said, well, fail forward, right? You make one mistake, just keep going. So, Mike, was there anything in our first podcast, because I remember it being so darn good, was there anything we talked about a month ago when we recorded this that we didn't hit on this one that you wanted to add?
I think the only thing I would add before the final questions, there are a couple of books that I like that talk about resiliency, and one is actually called Failing Forward by John Maxwell. So turning mistakes into stepping stones for success, that might be an opportunity for any of you to read that and look at his work. And I know that there are a number of books that he's written that are good from a leadership perspective. A book I'm reading actually right now is called Grit by Angela Duckworth. And it's a great book that talks about, you know, what are those characteristics and how do you develop that resiliency? And so I think that's been, and there's actually a way to assess that as well. We've started to wrap that into how we assess residency candidates and, you know, because the work we do is so hard in so many different ways that it's good to be able to have people have resiliency. And those are just two references that I think may help your listeners to the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. We'll put links to those books in the show notes. I always appreciate getting book recommendations or leadership book recommendations, particularly from those we're interviewing on this podcast. So thanks for adding that. All right. Well, we'll go into our speed round where just a few quick questions to let listeners learn a little more about you and really round out the Fail Forward interview. So, Mike, what is your favorite quote?
So my favorite quote is by the excellent philosopher Yoda. So do or do not, there is no try.
Yes, that is such a good one. I know after I listened to one of your presentations, I caught myself saying try and hope. And hope is not a strategy, right?
Right. That's another one.
So Mike is really good at living that out, do or do not. Next question, what is the best professional event you've ever attended?
So I was able to attend an event in Boston with Michael Porter, and he is a healthcare economist who's written a book called Redefining Healthcare with Elizabeth Tisberg. And it was an all-day session with a number of healthcare executives from around the country in a very small group setting. That was an amazing experience because he studied how do we continue to improve healthcare, and to have that type of interaction with him, ask questions specifically and receive that kind of knowledge was a really transformational event for me.
Very cool. How do you recharge?
How do I recharge? We've talked about the family component. I think that's huge for me, is spending time with my family as a way to fill the tank. I grew up as a kid doing a lot of construction, wood and metal, so I still like to do woodworking and metalwork, trying to teach my son how to weld. So I think those are ways to kind of escape and to fill my tank up and take my mind off of all the different things that we do. I had a chance to play sports in college too, so I like playing golf and basketball. But you know, it's just time away from the daily grind of doing work is a good way to recharge the batteries.
Yeah. I haven't really asked follow-up questions to the speed round, but I want to here. Because it is important to have a hobby. It is important to give time to your family. But I know in my own life, it's so easy to get sucked into the 24/7 availability of work. So how do you intentionally make time to recharge, or have you tried different things that have worked or not worked, because it's so easy to bypass those other things for work and when you're in positions like you're in?
I think that's a great question. Kate and I were just talking about this a little bit before we started the podcast, but when you have kids that are active and they have a lot of things going on, you tend to get pulled into their activities and you are forced to take time away from work to support their interests and endeavors. So I think that has forced me to find time away. But I work to set up limits, even with my device. You know, I have the opportunity on my phone to be able to put limits with the things that I do. I know some of the new functionality with phones allows that. Screen time is a huge killer of time, and it's a way to stay connected into work. And I encourage everyone to find some time away from the screen, and I try to do that every day. And make sure that when we have dinner, there's no screen time, there's no phones. It's just time together, talking about how the day went. Right now it's harder for me because of the position I'm in to be completely disconnected.
Right.
But you have to find a way to do that. Otherwise, it's not sustainable. You'll just burn out.
Yep. So there's no magic formula, but it's just doing it. You just have to do it.
Well, and sometimes you don't know that you're that deep into it. And having someone that almost like an accountability partner, whether it's your family or whether it's somebody at work, to just check in with you and make sure that you're getting time to recharge your batteries or find some social time. I try to do that as well with my teams, to just get away and talk about things that are not related to work. It's tough because work consumes so much so frequently throughout the day. It's important to do that. I don't have a magic answer, and I think we all do it in different ways, but having some focus on doing that is important.
That's great. Well, that's the end of our Fail Forward interview with Mike Brownlee, Chief Pharmacy Officer at University of Iowa Healthcare. So fortunate, Mike, to have you right here in where I work for the Iowa Pharmacy Association, right in our own backyard, and really appreciate everything you've done for pharmacy here in Iowa, but also your leadership nationally through ASHP, through Vizient, and health informatics, and telepharmacy, and other areas that you're known and look to for your expertise. So thank you so much for joining the Fail Forward podcast and sharing not only some of your successes, but the bumps along the way.
Thanks, Kate. I really appreciate the opportunity, and encourage everyone on the podcast to take time to find resiliency and find a way to recharge your batteries. So best of luck to everyone, and thanks for the opportunity today.
Each episode, our prescription for resilience is shared by Tammy Rogers, founder of the Maven Group. Tammy is best known for helping leaders experience aha moments in order to develop new ways of thinking, new attitudes, and new behaviors that transfer to the real world. She draws upon the Fail Forward interview and weaves in those experiences. Here's Tammy Rogers with our Resilience RX.
I do a lot of executive coaching. And one of the things that happens is I have folks come in and they tell me all sorts of stories about how this person is doing that and that person is doing this and this is what's going on here and this person and that person. And their stories are truly often about pointing fingers at somebody else, placing blame on somebody else, literally saying, it's not my fault. And one of the pieces in these conversations that comes up time and time and time again is, how did you contribute to that? And when I ask that question, it oftentimes stops people in their tracks. You see, most of us literally feel as if it's happening to us. It's out of our control, and it's something that literally is put on us. We had nothing to do with that. Unfortunately, that's just not the truth. Oftentimes, when we're in conflict with others, yes, they have actually probably done something. And we have also contributed to making that problem bigger. And that's the piece I think sometimes we don't think about. We can bring drama into our lives. We can bring burnout into our lives. We can be overwhelmed, more overwhelmed, because of how we respond and react to the things that are happening. So something to think about is, when you're in that place where you're having conflict with another person, stop and think, one, how have I contributed to that? The second thing I also want you to think about is the thing that Mike talked about in the podcast, is truly trying to understand what winning means for them. So let's talk about that for a minute. We oftentimes respond, react, have an emotion without even knowing what's going on the other side. And so in that minute, in that beat where we're having that reaction, if we can stop for just a second and just have a question, say, help me understand your perspective. Help me understand your perspective. Tell me what winning looks like. If you could do it your way, what would that look like? And why would you do it that way? What's the benefit? I want to understand what you're thinking, why you're thinking that, what makes sense about that to you. Because when I take a minute just simply to understand the world from their perspective, what's really interesting is somewhere in there, there's probably a connection. There's probably a crossroads where we can come together and build off that strategy. But our reaction oftentimes is because we just don't understand their perspective. We don't have the same experiences. We don't have the same background. We don't have the same knowledge. So we come to different conclusions. And when we take a minute to just understand the place that they're coming from, that's when we get enough information that we can get side by side and move forward to solving that problem. So like Mike said, sometimes you're going to work with people that you don't necessarily like. Sometimes you're going to work with people where you see the world a completely different way. And in all honesty, sometimes work has us at a place where we are actually at cross purposes instead of crossroads. And even then, if we take the time to understand where they're coming from, why they have that perspective, what they're trying to accomplish, we can go from cross purposes to being at a crossroads where together we can make a decision that will allow them to win and allow us to win. It's just one of the secrets of being more resilient at work. It's finding a way to be collaborative instead of being in a world where we're constantly competing. When we collaborate instead of compete at work, what we're actually doing is creating a culture of well-being and resiliency. And that's really what we're looking for, because burnout happens when we compete, and well-being and resiliency happens when we understand one another and we can collaborate to solve problems.
Resilience RX is a podcast dedicated to increasing awareness, sharing strategies, and providing a prescription for resilience to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. To discover additional tools and resources to assist you, your colleagues, and your team, visit www.iarx.org/burnout and www.mavengroup.com. If you know a pharmacy leader you'd like to have interviewed, please send us a note. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please share it with other pharmacy professionals and others who may benefit from this month's Resilience RX.